Good morning, Judy Terrez and the Research Center. It's Terry Anderson. Just logging in and gonna find out how things are in MBA land. Hope you can hear me all right. Is this your first time on Illuminate, Judy?
Check 1 2. Check 1 2. Check 1 2. Good. Good. Check 1 2. Check 1 2. Speaker adjustment. That's my left. That's the speaker volume. I'll give you other people speaking. Okay. So here we go.
Hi, Judy and Karis. We need to do a bit of a sound check over here. I'll turn off my mic, and if you do have mics, could you please talk back to us? Thank you. Hi, Judy and Carrie. I hope I'm coming through. We need you to do an audio check. If you can talk back at me, I'd appreciate it. Just say hi up here in Athabasca, please. Okay, we'll put that on Santa's wish list for you. You are capable of corresponding with us with a chat box, and that's very good because there will be a question period during the session, and that's a very good way of just put your little hand up, it'll flash, and then we'll catch your questions. Thank you.
Testing 1 2.
Hi, Pete. Can you tell us where you're at? Give us a bit of an audio feedback so we could catch our audio at this end, please. Thank you. Terry, we know you're a pro at this. Can you give us a little chat back so we could check the sound at this end, please?
No problem. I'm calling from beautiful wintry Edmonton, and I hope you can hear me all right. I could crank up my mic just a little bit, and we'll do that. There we go. So I hope that that sounds okay, and you can let me know how it's coming across.
Terry, we couldn't hear you. We saw movement, but we couldn't hear you. Can you try that again?
1 2 3, calling again. Yeah, if you can see the little bars going up there, then that means the Illuminate is working, and it must be your own sound system. Maybe Pete or Judy could either click the little green arrow up top, the check mark, to say they can hear me, or type in the text if they can hear me all right. Over.
Not sure just how this is working, but I can hear Terry fine. This is Pete Newsted in BC.
Yeah, that was good, Pete. I could hear you. It was a little bit faint. You might want to just slide the next time you talk, or you can reply if you want, and then it'll help them as they debug in Athabasca as well. But you might want to just click the your mic slider a little bit to the right, and as you talk, you should be able to see the little meter going into the green, maybe into the yellow, but not way up in the red, and it's up too high. But you were just barely on the meter when you last talked, so try again.
Okay, I'm going to try this now with a little louder. Let me know how this is, Terry.
Yeah, that was great. I could hear you quite clearly. Oh, and Carolyn has joined us from beautiful tropical Winnipeg, I assume. How are you doing today, Carolyn?
Just fine, thank you, Terry. Is that too loud?
Yeah, way too loud.
Okay, I turned it down.
I think that was a lot better. Didn't quite talk loud enough to see, but I think it was. Yeah, it sounded better, and I think the meter was in the appropriate green area. How about you guys at the Research Center or at the Governing Council Chamber? Can you hear us chatting now?
Yes, real wonderful conversation. Thank you, Terry, for kind of looking after some traffic. Are you going to be doing some moderating? Do you want to do some moderating? Give me a reply, and then I want the gals in the room here to do a little audio test. Thank you.
No, I've got a pile of marking. I was going to multitask, marking papers and listening to the presentation, and I don't think I'm mentally capable of moderating and doing those other two things. So, but I'll hang in case there's any problems.
Thank you, I understand, appreciate it. Okay, we'll let Maureen and Cam test their mics here, please, one moment.
Hi everybody, can you hear me? And this is Cam at the Research Center, can you hear me?
Yeah, we could hear you both fine. I think if you look at that little gauge down in the bottom, and as long as it's in the green, yellow, you can just assume that we can all hear you, and I'm sure we will.
We're still doing some internal sound discussion here. When you see this, that means we've got control of talking. You don't see it on there, but if you had a laptop, you would see it. And then I've got all of the talking control. They can't talk out there. They could raise their hands and do what they're doing now, and then we recognize them and let them speak.
Okay.
But it doesn't show up, does it? Is it?
No, it doesn't. The one when it's not Netflix, it'll actually say talk.
Okay, Pete, I'll give you a chance in a moment, please.
I'm just learning this system here. No hurry. I think I can hear everything just fine. I'm assuming, and maybe someone can correct me, unless I get the on-the-air thing, I'm not talking, and I have to wait till other people stop. So I'm just learning here, but feel free to tell me what to do. I'll click off.
Yeah, you're right, Pete. It's a single duplex system, which has its advantages in the sense that you can chit-chat, or the dog can come in and start howling, and it won't be shared with the rest of the room. It has a little bit of disadvantage, and the turn-taking is a little more constrained, so you have to raise your hand. And you can see that you correctly found out how to raise your hand. You should now, after your question's been asked, you should click it again, and then it'll lower your hand so that we know that the question you got her. And for all those who are new too, if somebody cracks an outrageously funny joke, you can click the little smiley like I just did, or you can clap if they do something really worth clapping for. Those are right beside the hands in the middle area. And if they poll us, like if they say, well, how many people are really awake, then right at the top there's a poll of either a check mark or X mark. So we can say, how many people are ready for Christmas? Then you check, you can have it go beside your name. Well, what the heck? It isn't working. Well, this is very strange. I've never seen the polling tool not working. Oh, maybe it's related to the permissions that Shirley has given us. Okay. And anyways, over to you guys.
Hi, Terry. I thought of that just as you were mentioning that. I tried to click on the top of that column for the polling, and it wouldn't let me give that permission out, so I'm not sure what's going on with that either.
Just for the fun of it, why don't you just click on the top of the graphics thing, the writing thing, and then I'll try it again and see if that makes it work, or that other one on the right, which I'm not even sure what that is, that top little square white thing, but click on it, just give us all as much permission as we can, and we'll see if it is related to the polling function. Yeah, okay, now I'm going to go and click. No, it's not working still. I try giving this the right position as well by clicking on the top, not just your own name, but on the blue part there, click, and then we'll all get our pins. Shirley, I noticed that Carolyn is back. She must have been bumped off, but maybe you can click on her audio or her mic so she can talk. Yeah, good. And I assume we're starting at 12:15, and Carolyn asked, oh yeah, you've answered, there are 5 plus 2 presenters. Well, not a huge crowd in Athabasca, but maybe there'll be more online here.
We're hoping so, but maybe we'll have to wait till it's 40 below, and then we'll get a full house. It's just still way too nice the winter.
Yes, I accidentally logged myself off when playing with the polling tool, but I'm back.
Hi, Pete. It's Maureen here at Athabasca.
Hi, Maureen. It's good this tool's working. This seems pretty slick so far.
We're using this, so it's kind of a neat tool. I know Judy and Karis out back at SIM don't have a microphone, so we won't test that. So.
Judy and Carr, you're not eliminated, though, from conversation. You can always use the chat box if you wish.
That all seems to work quite well. Is there any capability? I know it will do PowerPoint slides, but is there any capability for video or whiteboards or anything like that?
Sure, I can answer that, Pete. Yeah, it's got a number of tools. If we advanced backwards, you could have the, actually I'm not a moderator, so I can't do it, but you could have a whiteboard, and then it has your standard set of text and drawing tools, all that sort of pointers so that you can, you know, point things out as you walk along with the presentation if you want. It's got a big public calculator if you're doing math. It does application sharing, so you can have people control a spreadsheet, or you can show them a spreadsheet that's operating on your machine and everyone can look at it. You can do web safari, so you can take people to particular websites. And well, of course, the recording works. You can see it's on right now down at the bottom. And it has the polling, and there's a quiz feature too that you can have pre-set up quizzes, and then it'll record what the marks of the individual students. It's sort of got a bit of a K-12 flavor to it, but it's a general presentation tool. It does webcam as well, not the H323 video conferencing, the high quality. It's kind of a grainy kind of a small webcam video. It does streaming video in the sense that if you have a video clip, you load it up and it will send it out to each of the participants, and assuming they have the player, QuickTime or whatever, to run it. It's quite slick because it has a little meter that tells you when it's downloaded, because if people come in at different speeds and you say play, sometimes, you know, some people are halfway finished before the other people even start playing it, so it solves that problem as well.
That's all slick stuff. It's neat. I'm using this on a 3-4-year-old laptop, and it installed fine, and it just seems to be working. So this is all great.
Yeah, I think there's lots of applications for us at Athabasca with our virtual workplace for a tool like this. It doesn't have the full duplex chit-chat kind of thing that you find in a teleconference, as I said, but other than that, I find now when I just do a straight audio teleconference, it seems pretty constrained compared to the kind of tools that you get in this environment. And the other thing is that Brian, the CIO, and CS has paid for the license, so we have unlimited use up to 25 people at a time, and it can be booked for center meetings, individual consultation. You can start a classroom that students can just go into anytime they want, if you want. Lots of ways that it could be used.
Yeah, I like the archiving feature. I was listening to a little bit of your presentation from, I believe it was last week, which was quite interesting.
Hi, Terry, it's Diane. How does Illuminate compare to Centra, and what happened to Centra?
Well, Centra is still the market share leader. They're an American company. They're a little bit more expensive than Illuminate, but Illuminate is not the lowest cost product either on the market. Illuminate's a Canadian, Calgary-based outfit. Centra never developed a Mac client, so they sort of cut themselves off of the educational world. But in the business world, they're still market share leader. And I think there's about 95% the same features. Illuminate brags that they're better at doing for dial-up and mixed mode because it allows you to, if you're on a slow connection, then sometimes it goes quiet for a while, but then you get this squeaky voice as it picks up from where you lost so that you don't lose things. And they brag that that's unique from them compared to the competition. But I don't know. I haven't checked the competition out that thoroughly.
If you'd like, we're going to go around the room here and do an introduction. We see who's out in the Illuminate land because that's on the screen, but we'll just go around the room and then we'll start our session after that's complete. Okay?
Hello, Martin Cushman with the School of Business.
And Andy Gorham, I'm here helping with the technicals, Terry.
Diane Conrad.
Steve Bowen, Computing Services.
And I'm Maureen Hutchison. I'm the Acting Manager of the Learning Services Department at the Center for Innovative Management and a Course Production Coordinator.
And I'm Karen Jugdet, and I'm an Assistant Professor in Project Management and Strategy at SIM.
Great. So good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to today's Research Center Lunch and Learn. We'd like to thank you for attending today's presentation. Upcoming presentations. On January 18th, Robert Holmberg and Conrad Michalski are going to present technologies for speeding return of students' assignments. On January 25th, Trevor Gilbart and Billy Chung will present using online interactive tutorials in teaching psychology and neuroscience. Our FOIP announcement. According to FOIP regulations, we must inform you that today's Lunch and Learn presentation is being videotaped. The purpose of taping is to allow people who are unable to attend today's session to view the proceedings via the URL, which will be provided after today's session, possibly early next week. It's my pleasure now to introduce to you Cam Jugdev and Maureen Hutchison.
Thank you, Shirley. We really appreciate the opportunity to spend the next 45 minutes with you folks to discuss a couple of course improvements that we've undertaken at the Center for Innovative Management. We entitled this presentation Online Course Innovations, but when we think about course improvements, these are just like mini innovations in terms of using existing practices at other universities and that we may have used at other courses within the university that we've just adapted a little bit to some of our courses, and we'd like to share with you how that worked and some things that didn't work and what we continue to try to do to make further improvements to make sure that our courses can be better every time we offer them to students. So Maureen and I will co-share doing the presentation, and I'll get us started, and then Maureen will present the section on the great the orientation, and then I'll also cover off the debate approach that we've used in our presentations. Here's a little bit about our outline. We're going to talk a little bit about our teaching and learning approach, which is adult-centered, and different ways that we can engage our students. We'll talk a little bit about the orientation and the great debate as really two techniques that others have used before that we've adapted a little bit for our purposes at SIM, and talk a little bit about what worked and what didn't and what our students have had to say. And we'd welcome your comments and discussion as we go through the presentation, as well as your ideas and thoughts on techniques and approaches that you've used to improve courses yourselves. When we think about our teaching and learning approach, these five or six points really emphasize the Masters of Business Administration approach to what we are looking for to develop in our students in terms of their behaviors. We're looking at curriculum and teaching aimed at adult learners. So we're trying to facilitate learning from others as well as learning from experts. So a lot of it, the learning that our students continue to tell us that they've really benefited from happens to take place with each other in the course of their asynchronous discussions on Lotus Notes. A lot of active learning and then feedback as well, and understanding and enacting the link between management theory and practice. Now in our MBA program, because it's an executive MBA program, the average age of our students is about 40 years old, about a pretty even mix of men and women. Most of our students have about 8 to 10 years of managerial experience, so they're coming to us with a wealth of experience in a diverse number of industries out there. So what we try to do with our courses is to share with them and help them learn management theories in the various disciplines, but we also strongly encourage them to start to apply the theory that they're learning to practice through their various assignments that they work on individually and as groups. And more than anything, we're really trying to focus on helping them improve their critical and strategic thinking practices. And here's a diagram that just summarizes active learning principles in terms of how the learning takes place. And you'll see here that there's a lot of the learning that takes place between students, students and the context, students and coaches. And I'd have to say that if we were to tweak this diagram a little bit, that when I'm teaching or preparing a course and Maureen and I are working on courses together, there's a lot of learning that takes place for us as well as we're working on courses. Here's a little bit just about our learning environment. Our courses are 8 weeks in length. They're very intense courses. More than likely, I'm sure your students tell you the same thing about the undergrad courses or other graduate level courses. The strategy course is the first course that the students take, and inevitably students will spend a good 30, if not 35 hours a week for the first couple of weeks of the program. They're very new to the technology. They're very new to an online learning environment. They're very new to perhaps graduate studies as well. Many of them have been away from an educational environment, some of them for a good 20 years. So they're experiencing a lot of newness in their lives in the academic realm. And so that first course puts them on a very steep learning curve in many respects as well. And 8 weeks can go by very quickly. And the students, again, are located all over the place, at working on their assignments and working with each other at different times. And so the asynchronous approach works well for this because students can certainly log on throughout the course of the day, on weekends, whatever works for them in terms of their busy lifestyles. Now the way we try to encourage that paced nature of the courses too is that it's not an asynchronous, do what you want, 8 weeks later you're done approach, but throughout that 8 weeks, there are set dates whereby in some of our courses students have to provide formal responses to discussion questions by, say, Wednesday of the week. In order to do so, they have to have done their readings to prepare for that. That gives them from Wednesday onwards until Sunday to continue engaging in the asynchronous discussions with their colleagues because they get participation marks as well. So when their coaches are logging on and reviewing the various discussion threads, they're able to assess the students on their formal responses as well as the discussion that takes place thereafter. Now, the disadvantage, of course, for some students who may not post their initial responses until later in the week is that no one then benefits from that discussion that could take place with that wealth of experience that the student could bring to the table. So students learn very quickly that it's important for them to pace themselves in the course of the week, but they still have that flexibility of doing so within the span of a couple of days. We're using Lotus Notes, and students will have multiple databases to work with. One database in particular will be their courseware database, where they will receive their lesson plans, so to speak, on a weekly basis, and the readings that they'll be covering on a weekly basis. So if students want to work ahead, they can certainly do so. Another database may be called their discussion database, which is a database within which a group of 8 to 10 students can interact and post responses and their formal responses to the weekly questions. And then there may be a group preparation database, and the group preparation database is where a group of 8 to 10 students would work on group assignments with each other. And then there may well be a group presentation database, which is where several groups would post their assignments so that one to three groups could see the assignments that other groups have developed in response to, say, the same case study or a debate. And then they can at least see the sorts of approaches different groups have taken to provide answers to those case study questions or debate, but they will not see the coach's feedback given to the groups. And there certainly can be extensive interaction. With most of our courses, students are expected to, they have to pass participation as part of their courses, meaning that they have to get 60% there, but they also have to get a good grade in terms of their participation. And generally the courses will range from 25 to up to 40% of the mark is based on participation. Now what that typically means is that students have to interact a good 6 to 8 to 10 times a week with solid responses that reflect their experience, how they're linking the readings to practice, or how they may be challenging or critiquing someone else's posting and relating that to the readings or their own experiences. And then as academic coaches, we're in the databases as well, encouraging students to continue to interact, challenging them when perhaps they're getting very descriptive, when they could become more analytical with their discussions, and really giving them the positive feedback that they'll need when they're doing a really good job at what they're doing. Because again, when they're new to this sort of environment, they're really not sure what's expected of them. So that reinforcement is so important, especially in the first couple of courses that they take with us. So in terms of how we apply our teaching and learning, it's an online environment, and we struggle sometimes in terms of how we can make it very engaging and interesting. And the reason I say that is that I know that some of you probably have a wealth of experience when it comes to learning styles. It's something relatively new to myself personally because my core disciplines are project management and strategy, but I've been fascinated by how much more there is out there in terms of online learning. And so we've done a little bit of reading and looking at learning styles, and Maureen and I actually did a couple of little tests to sort of assess our own learning styles, and we found that myself as an academic and Maureen as a course editor and our manager of course production both had visual styles whereby we like to be able to see things, read text, pictures are good, but that really works for us. And when you think of the courses that I've described for you in our MBA environment, they're very visual as well because we provide them with databases where students are pretty much reading a lot of the time. But you know, a lot of students will learn better by being audio learners, where they can hear something repeated again and again. And other people may be very kinesthetic, where they need to touch something and feel it, and it has to be very much more tangible for them. And there must be another learning style that's just not coming to me right now. But people learn in different ways. And one of the challenges we face is that because our courses are so text-based and visual, that if there are, and we know there are, learners out there who learn better using different styles, we may not be reaching them as effectively as we could. So that's why these continuous improvements are so important to us as we try to think about different ways that we can adapt and tweak our courses to make them a little better so that we can reach out to different students and their learning styles. One of the things, for example, that we've tried to do is that when students come to us and they take their first week of orientation with us, we bring to their attention that students do have different learning styles and that it's important for them to sort of do a mini assessment to find out what their learning style is like, so that if perhaps the content that they're trying to absorb doesn't quite fit with their learning style, then they can use some techniques that will help them learn that material a little better, or perhaps come up with some techniques that will help them learn the material that's more suitable to their ways of learning. So Terry, I have to say that using this Illuminate technology today has been very enlightening for us, because it's certainly much more interactive than perhaps we have found our Lotus Notes to be in some respects as well. I'm going to turn things over to Maureen now, and she's going to spend a bit of time talking to you folks about our orientation and some of the improvements that we've made to that particular first week that our students undertake before they start their first course with us.
Thank you, Cam. As Cam has mentioned, giving you a background on our learning environment, for many students coming into our MBA program, as Cam mentioned, it may have been 20 years since they've taken a course, and online learning is perhaps very new to them. So we found that it's very important to orient our students. The orientation is an actual course, and it's a 5-day course that's taken the week before the strategic management course, which is their first academic course in the program. It is a must to take course, although there are no marks associated with it, but we do expect students to be taking it. It is facilitated by an MBA graduate of our program, so they are very familiar with the kind of questions that students will have. They've gone through the program. They are eager. They're very knowledgeable about the program. And the one coach handles approximately 100 or so students, so it's a very intensive week of discussion and interaction. What we've tried to do is to have the orientation course mirror our academic courses. And one analogy that we've used in our orientation course is that we want the students to be focusing on the meat and the potatoes rather than the fork once they get to their strategic management course. So we've set up the orientation to have discussion databases, as Cam has mentioned, which is a way that we have students interact in the course. Students are given a set work plan, and each day of the orientation has an agenda with learning objectives. We have assignments as well that are required as part of the course, and although they aren't marked, it is an opportunity for students to submit assignments using a specialized assignment drop box that we have, so that they're aware of how to use this when they get into a course situation. We also have them exposed to a code of conduct exercise, or a way of managing their group process. Because the students are going to be working in groups, it's important for them to understand how they're going to be working together, the importance of understanding perhaps different learning styles and different personalities. So we have them look at that initially as well. And we also introduce them to case study and analysis, because it's an important part of the program, and we have them do a discussion on the importance of case study and why case studies work in a business program. So that's part of the orientation as well. We have some specific orientation goals that we've set out for the students, and these fall in line with the core competencies that we want our students to have at the end of the program. Primarily, we want our students to be able to be familiar with how to use Lotus Notes, how to use the technology, and working in the databases. Again, focusing on learning the fork before they get to the meat and potatoes. To make students aware of the university's processes and our Center for Innovative Management processes. So we introduce them to a student handbook that we have, so they're aware of the guidelines and policies. We introduce them to the code of conduct, plagiarism, all of the important things before they start in their academic courses. We also expose them quite a bit in the orientation to time management and organizational tools and techniques. And this is because, as Cam mentioned, many of them are in an executive position. They're often parents working, you know, full-time working. They, time management is very important to them, and it can be quite a change when you're looking at 20 to 35 hours per week in addition to your other duties. So we do a lot on time management. And lastly, we really want to help students have confidence when they move into their first course that they can interact in this environment, that they're oriented, they feel comfortable, they feel secure and knowledgeable in what they're going to be using going forward. As Cam has mentioned also, we really stress participation in the program, and participation in the orientation course is no different. We have our orientation coach set the expectations as to how students will participate in the course. As I mentioned, there's daily activities, and the coach is very intensively interacting with the students. If there are any students who, for whatever reason, for personal or work reasons, are not attending the orientation, the coach will let our registrations department know, and we track those students. And a member of our registration staff will actually contact that student directly. This registration staff, a cohort coordinator is what we call them, will have dealt with this student as they've been brought into the program. So it's a very personal relationship, and it's a way for them to say, hey, you know, we know that you're not participating. Come join, and you know, it's important for you to be in there. So we really stress the participation aspect. Then once the academic course starts in the following week, the coaches and the other students will know a little bit more about their fellow students and colleagues, and can help to develop a rapport with the other students as they move into their academic course. Cam has talked a little bit about understanding the learning styles, and we actually take students to the Athabasca University site that shows different learning styles, again, so that they can find out what kind of style they are. And as Cam mentioned, it's important for them to understand their own learning style, but also for them to understand that others will have different learning styles as well. And knowing that in a group situation, they'll be interacting with different students, and they may see things differently because they have different learning styles. So as Cam says, our courses are primarily visual. We have been introducing other aspects into our program. We have some PowerPoint slideshows with audio. We have some other slideshows. So we're trying different things. And again, we're trying to continually improve, so we may be adding more of that to our program. So we challenge you also to, you know, on your own, find out what your own learning style is, and it might be kind of interesting for you to figure that out. In the orientation, we also offer some writing and teaching aids. That's one of the goals of the program, is for these students who are primarily coming from a business background to understand the difference between business and academic writing. And as many of the students haven't been in an academic program before, they may be managers who have a lot of experience but not a lot of scholastic background. Going into a graduate level courses, it's important that they understand what the difference is. So we orient them to that, and we have several exercises in the orientation that that allow them to practice academic writing. We also introduce them to the AU library services and how to find academic papers, the digital reading room, and exploring the different journal databases, because they'll be using those as they go through the program. We also introduce students to referencing papers, and actually one of the assignments is on finding an article, referencing it properly, and submitting it. So we have them doing several activities at once to test, to familiarize themselves with how they'll be interacting in their academic course. We also have tried the plagiarism software Turnitin, and we did try it in our strategic management course, but we did drop it. It's something that we do remind students that we have the opportunity to use it, so it is there as a reminder to students. But Cam, I don't know if you want to comment a little bit on why we dropped it, but
well, you know, we tried to turn it in about a year ago. We initially tried it in our orientation, but unfortunately our assignments were just too short for us to be able to use Turnitin effectively to be able to find anything that had been plagiarized, because by the time students had provided a 100-word response plus referenced it, the reference would take up 20, 25 words, and that would show up as having been plagiarized when that wasn't the case, because that reference was available in so many places on the internet. So we've tried it on with our strategy course, and for those of you who haven't used it, it has taken me less than 5 minutes to be able to run 100 assignments through the Turnitin software. It's very quick, very effective. What we found, though, was that there were very few instances for the couple of times we used Turnitin for entire courses to find anything worth going through all of this effort for. So what we decided to do instead was that we let all of our students know before they start the program with us that we do have the option of using this software if we feel the need to do so. And what we've done is informed our academic coaches that if they have any concerns about a student's writing or notice a change in the style, that they would like it run through Turnitin, that they would just send it to the academic area manager and I would simply run this through the software for them, and then we'd just be able to deal with that on a one-to-one basis with the students as these instances occur. And so that's the approach we've taken, rather than sort of blitzing every assignment possible, doing it on an as-needed basis, and it seems to be working really well so far.
One of the other additions that we've just recently added to the orientation is the English Language Assessment Tool, and it's a mini tool that the Graduate Center Master of Arts and Integrated Studies has developed. And it's a small tool, it's an internet-based tool where students can take a brief test. I think it takes, maybe 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes. And it helps students to recognize if they have any problems in either reading or comprehension or grammar. And if they want extra help in this area, then they can contact their coach or the academic area manager, Cam, to arrange for a writing coach through me. So it's something, again, that we're piloting and trying out, and we hope to have good feedback from our students on. The most important thing I think we want to leave our students with, beyond all of the fork items, is the fact that they can do it, that they are at a point in their career where they've taken on something that is going to be a challenge and a commitment, and they may be apprehensive about it, but we really want to let them know that, yes, you can do it. We're giving you these tools to help you. There's a lot of people involved, your coach, the administrative staff, the registration staff, who are there to support you through this. So that's one of the main things we want to leave students with. We hope that it will build their confidence and that they'll have encouragement not only from other staff, but also from students and from their family as well. We encourage that they get their family support behind it. We offer a PowerPoint presentation from our past MBA graduates, graduates in 2003, who had a lot of great tips, facts like participate regularly, ask for help when you need it, and to focus on the big picture, to really have a balance in your life and your studies. We also have available for our students some video clips of recent grads, and again, this is a way for them to see and to hear from grads who have gone through the program that, it was a commitment, it was, challenging at times, but it was very much worthwhile, and you can do it too. So that's a really important aspect of the program. Lastly, I'm just going to hand this over to Cam. One thing that we found is that it's important for us to measure and share our experiences. And as the academic area manager for the orientation course, Cam has developed a survey that we surveyed students through Zoomerang, this survey software. And Cam can comment a little bit on the kind of comments students gave us on the orientation and how it helped.
Thank you, Maureen. Folks, if you look at slide 8 of the presentation that talks about the orientation goals, when we developed this survey, we simply wanted to assess students by the time they finished this week-long orientation how they felt before they started their orientation about the program, some of their anxieties in terms of the technology, the program itself, and then how they felt having taken the orientation in terms of their confidence. And another reason that we did this survey was that every year when our students graduate, we gather feedback from them in terms of what they've really benefited from and what advice they'd give their other students going through the program. And the one thing that continued to resonate with us is that students kept saying they wanted to encourage the other students. You have the confidence. You can do it. And so the focus we've really taken with the orientation is to help students build that confidence. I can't tell you how many times we'll talk to students who haven't started with us yet, and they'll say, well, I think everyone else is a lot smarter than I am. I haven't been at university for a good 10, 15 years. They know how to do it, they're smarter, and I've forgotten how to learn. And they find that And it's almost like magic. By the third or fourth week of their very first course, they take to it like ducks to water. And all of them are just taking to it so well that by the end of the course, they go into what we call replication withdrawal. They want to be online interacting with each other, but the course is over and they have to wait 2 weeks before the next course starts. So it's just fascinating to watch them learn and interact and engage with each other. So as we assess them using this mini survey, we gathered 2 years' worth of data. And Heather Kanuka and I recently published a paper that's coming forward in Open Learning on our findings there. And, you know, clearly the orientation makes a difference. Rather than just having students start with their very first day in the MBA program being the very first day of their very first academic course, easing them into the program by acclimatizing them to the technology, the environment, what to expect, allowing them time to ask questions and to feel comfortable with what they're going to face, sets them up to be that much more successful once they start the program itself. And Maureen and Carrie Markowski and I also published two short papers in the Online Classroom, which is a practitioner-based oriented publication, very similar to the Teaching Professor. The Online Classroom covers many innovative, simple and yet useful techniques for those who work in distance education. And I know in talking to Dan West that we do have access to that publication through the university now. And it's a very handy, short little, often four-page digest to review. And I know I certainly look forward to getting my link on a regular basis to go through those articles, because I find that it gives me something to reflect on. As Maureen and I will often talk about courses we're working on together, we'll bounce ideas off of each other and think, now how can we maybe apply this or change what we're doing in our current courses to make it that much better? So it's always that continuous improvement theme that we're trying to focus on. Which brings us then really to the next area that we've worked on, and we called it the Great Debate, only in the sense that it was something new to a couple of courses where we tried it. Now this is certainly an approach that others have used in the distance education environment as well as in face-to-face courses. Certainly at the Center for Innovative Management, we've had Mike Mayo and Robert Sexty, one of our core academics, and Robert Sexty is one of our academic coaches, and they've used this approach in a business and economics course a couple of years ago. So about 2 years ago, Maureen and I were talking about the strategy course, and we had just rewritten that course. And as we talked about different ways that we could improve an asynchronous course, which is very visual and text-based, our discussions led to thinking about using a debate as something different from a case study. And as we read a little more about using debates in some of the literature, case studies work really well. And we use them extensively in our executive MBA program. And yet sometimes students, when they're evaluating our courses, will give us some feedback indicating that they're getting a little tired of cases. But then again, they get tired of group work as well. And then when you give them individual assignments, they get tired of that and they complain about the workload no matter what you're trying. But we continue to try. And so we thought to ourselves, based on the previous successful experiences we'd had at SIM that other academics had in terms of using a debate, we thought we would try it with a couple of our other courses. So when we look at the Great Debate and the coach's role in the debate, we wanted to make sure that our academic coach who manages that course and has, say, 25 or so students that he or she is managing with maybe three groups, that academic coach has that academic leeway to perhaps come up with their own topic, because they're the ones who are going to be marking the position statements and the rebuttals as well. And so the coach will develop the debate topic, but what we've also done is provided them with a couple of example debate topics specific to the course, so that if they wanted to use an existing topic, they can do so. So the coach's role is to guide the debate process, but really as much as possible, keep a hands-off approach to reduce bias. The intent really is to allow the students to form as teams and to work out the division of labor amongst themselves and work on what we call a position statement and a rebuttal. So when we've used a debate in two of our project management courses, we allocated half of the marks for the position statement, a 1,000-word assignment, and half of the marks for the rebuttal statement. And then what we do is that they post their position statements and rebuttal statements into a group presentation database so that the other groups can see what they've done as well. Now, as we've looked at the literature and from our own experiences as well, some of the benefits of using a debate is that it really helps students develop their critical thinking skills in a different way. Sometimes a debate will help them develop a respect for different viewpoints. It'll especially help them explore their personal biases, and sometimes it forces them to take a side that they wouldn't necessarily support, and yet they have to try and defend it as part of the debate. So they really develop skills in this regard. And more importantly, oftentimes textbooks or readings can be very academic and sometimes a little on the drier side. With a debate, they're allowed to explore and discuss topics in a sort of a healthier, richer environment by bringing up topics that sometimes they don't get a chance to do when they're providing a case study assignment. They're also able to relate the concepts to controversial issues. So for example, in our project management courses, where we talk about lessons learned as a way of gathering what went well, what didn't go well, and what could be done differently on projects, we've used a debate topic whereby one side has taken the approach saying, lessons learned are a waste of time. It's an administrative exercise and we shouldn't have to do it. The other group has taken the side that lessons learned is a very important way of sharing knowledge and improving what we're learning on projects, and we should continue to invest money in conducting such an exercise on a project. And it's been challenging for students to take very black and white viewpoints on these topics, and they've really enjoyed doing so. So again, as Maureen had mentioned earlier, our students work on codes of conduct, kind of like the rules of engagement in the sandbox. How are they going to work and play together? And they develop their position and rebuttal statements. And then once they've posted them in the group presentation database, they have an opportunity to discuss the different viewpoints that they took and how they came to their conclusions and how they defended their positions and would they change their minds were they to do it again. Sometimes we get very little interaction in that particular discussion database. Sometimes with a group of 8 to 10 students, we'll see 100 different postings there because students are so engaged in carrying on the discussion. What we've decided to do, though, because we'll get such a range of interaction in this group presentation database, is that we do not mark it so that students will feel freer to at least participate and discuss the topic. And then we also use a peer evaluation technique, and you folks may as well in some of your courses. And it's a way of allowing students to assess each person's involvement in a group exercise, and they mark each other on a scale of 1 to 10, and the coach is the only one who will see how they've been marked. And then the coach can then adjust a student's individual mark up or down, because if one student scores 10 out of 10 and does really well across the board, and everyone else gets 7 out of 10, certainly one student has gone above and beyond and perhaps deserves a small increase in his or her participation. What we did when we did the debate was that we had students give us feedback on how the process worked and whether they'd like to do it again in a course. And really, the students have told us that it was a good complement to the cases. And in the courses where we've used the debate in our project two of our project management courses, students still work on a group case study, but then they also do a group debate. So we don't take the case study away entirely. They get to experience two different ways of learning. Students also commented that they felt that they sometimes had more open and honest discussions about the topic. They found it very thought-provoking, especially if they had to take a side that they didn't really agree with. And they learned the merits about taking opposing viewpoints. And many students also told us that they found it to be fun. And I have to say that that's something we really strive to sort of inject into our courses. It can be in little ways, just a little bit of humor. But if we can do something that's just a slightly different so that the course isn't the same every time they're going through from one course to another course, and certainly all of our academic area managers use continuous improvement techniques, students really welcome that. So that's worked out really well. Here are a couple of things that we learned in terms of perhaps what we would and wouldn't do again. I, of course, got so carried away with the debate working so well with some of our project management courses that I thought, you know, we should try the debate in the very first course that the students take with us in the MBA program. And that was just too much for students with their very first course. So we tried it with one run off the very first course that they take, and we decided that we'd better take that out. And what we actually ended up doing was changing the mix of cases for that very first course to be a very simple case and then a more advanced Harvard business case so that students were then again gradually immersed into that academic environment that way. So we tried the debate in the first course and we took it out. We continue to use it with two of our project management courses and students really seem to like it, so that's working out really well as well. We found that it was important to pace the debate. So it's structured over a three-week period whereby they have time to find out what the topic is, what side they're supposed to take. They can do a bit of research, develop their position statement, submit it, read the other position statement, develop their rebuttal, submit it, and have time to discuss it and debrief on it as well. And again, it's a powerful learning innovation from the readings that we've done and what the literature tells us, because it's a different way of learning. Rather than reading a case study, going through mounds and mounds of information, sometimes it's not all relevant to the discipline that you may be taking a course on. So it's just a different way of learning. And so it's about 8 minutes to one, I believe, and I thought we'd wrap things up there and open up things for discussion in terms of perhaps hearing from the rest of you in the audience your thoughts on using innovations in online education, and perhaps you've used some of the approaches we've tried with some of our courses, and you could share with us how that's worked for you, or we'll turn things over to Shirley to moderate then. Thank you.
Okay, the Illuminate audience knows to raise their hand to pose questions. Great, we've got one already from Carolyn Park. We'll give the mic to you, Carolyn, and the next would be Terry Anderson. Oh, Terry's applauding. I guess the girls are appreciating it. Terry, they're giggling, as girls will do. Was there a question, Carolyn, or did I just see something else going on there? Pete also applauding. Are there questions from the room here? Would anybody like the mic? Okay, one hand raised, and it's Terry. I'll give the mic to you, Terry.
Hi, well, thank you for that informative overview. It's amazing how much goes on in Athabasca that one never hears about it if it isn't in their own world, so I appreciate your taking the time to share. My question, I guess, is about the debate and maybe two questions. The first is whether the polarizing that sometimes happens in debates, whether that tends to hurt sort of collegial sharing and friendship and all those other things that we're trying to build as well in a cohort, or whether MBA people are all ruthlessly capitalistic and competitive and it's just part of the game. And then secondly, how do you evaluate say contributions in a debate or just their participation online? Is it for formal marks, and how do you deal with that?
Thank you, Terry. Two very good questions. In terms of whether it may polarize the students, when students come through as a cohort, they get divided up very randomly into groups. So they're balanced in terms of gender, and as much as possible, they haven't worked with the same group of students that they worked with on the last course. Now, they're only together for 8 weeks. Because they have a code of conduct, they tend to really focus on that common goal of we're here to do well, and so let's work together and get it done, and let's get good grades. So, and they may have other personal learning objectives as well. It doesn't tend to polarize them that much in terms of the division of labor, because as part of their code of conduct, students will also sometimes assign volunteer for roles or be assigned roles, and they'll rotate those roles as they work on a case study or a debate. So someone may be the researcher, someone may be the editor, someone may be trying to come up with those three or four key points that they want to develop as part of their position statement or their rebuttal statement. Your second question in terms of how do we evaluate it, we have a marking guide, and in that marking guide, we've given students some guidelines as to what we're looking for. We're expecting them, for example, to come up with three or four solid statements to support the position that they're taking using their readings and the academic literature, and then as part of the rebuttal, they are to rebut the position statement of the other group, but they are not to introduce any new material at this point in time, but they can certainly do so as part of the general discussion. So as part of the evaluation, we're looking for not just for them to summarize and describe what has been in the readings or the discussions, but to then critically analyze what they've read and discussed and be able to take a position and support it with what they've read.
Okay, Carolyn, you've got your hand up. Thank you for being patient. I'll turn the mic to you now.
Thank you. I admire, very good presentation, by the way, Cam and Maureen. I enjoyed it very much. And I admire your diligence in group work, but I myself have a great deal of difficulty with group assignments. So I do have a debate, though, in one of our courses, the Nursing Issues course, and it is just, we structure it with just two students, one pro, one con. Both students present in writing into the discussion forum on the same day, and then they have 2 days to go away and to structure their rebuttal. And then they come back and rebut each other on the same day, and then the next day the rest of the cohort are allowed to comment. I do it this way to get away from this who does what in the group kind of activity, but it works quite well.
Thank you, Caroline. That sounds wonderful. And I mean, again, it's using a slightly different technique to a concept of using a debate, and we're glad to hear that's working out so well for you. And you're absolutely right. Our students do get tired of group work no matter how we try to structure it. So it's interesting to see that you've tried assignments whereby students work in pairs. That's not something that we've really tried on our end, but it's something to consider, eh, Maureen?
It is, yes. There are some courses that we do have, Carolyn, that we are finding that group work maybe does not work quite as well. For instance, our financial courses, there is quite a bit of focus on individual work, and we found that often it's just a number crunching exercise that they're going through, so the group work is not necessarily beneficial. So we're, you know, re-examining the group work in our financial courses as well.
Okay, Pete, you have one question. I'll turn the mic to you. One moment.
Cam and Maureen, this is kind of a multiple question in a way, or at least with a bit of an ulterior motive. I'm just learning about Illuminate, and I'm wondering if you could see that would this tool be good or bad for us to do the debate? I mean, obviously it makes things synchronous, and of course we all know the problems with that, but what do you think?
Would we have any other questions before we need to close the session?
I think maybe you forgot to press the button down when, did Cam or Maureen respond to Pete's question? Because nothing came across, it was just silent.
Okay, Terry, thank you. Do you want to repeat that one?
Sure. My comment was, Pete, that's an excellent suggestion, and as I mentioned, this is the first time I'm using Illuminate, so it's something that is quite interesting to play around with, and I think showing this to our faculty might be quite interesting as well.
And I would agree with you too, Maureen. I must say, Terry, I have a colleague who's doing her EdD at the U of C, and they're using Illuminate for their program, and so she had shown me this technology about 6 months ago, and I was fascinated by the fact that it was so much more interactive than what we were experiencing, because Lotus Notes has its pluses. It really does for the value it provides us. The asynchronous nature is just wonderful, but sometimes we're challenged a little bit to make it that much more lively and using different technology, because as our new students are coming to us in the program, they're really looking for technology and tools that they can use in their courses that allow them to interact using multimedia type of formats. So Pete, very good question, and as Maureen said, we'd love to be able to take this back to Sim and discuss it further.
Now, Terry, where's your applause? Another question from Carolyn. We'll give you the mic right now.
I just wanted to reiterate what Terry said about how important and great it is for different centers to share what they're doing like this. In our own group, we have retreats every year, and you know, we spend hours talking about different types of groups and how we select people into groups, et cetera, et cetera, and I'm sure you do too. So I find it really refreshing and helpful to hear what you're doing. Thank you again.
And maybe I can just jump in. I think there is a real value in exposing our students to these new technologies. Even if they don't work perfectly, that's part of what an online education is to get online so you're capable of really making critical decisions about these new technologies as they come along. it is interesting too that you know, our communications problems within Athabasca, like I did do the song and dance on Illuminate about a month and a half ago, and I don't think anybody from SIM came for the lunch and learn. So again, it raises the question of how we get a learning culture here at Athabasca University. But that particular presentation, it is canned and recorded. So if SIM or any of the other schools wanted to use it as a half hour or an hour, or just even play around or just show it for a little bit and then have as part of a center meeting, either a distributed one or a face-to-face one, it is there and it is available. So I'm glad to hear there's some interest, because I think it is a useful tool. My final comment when do you use the synchronous and when do you not? We had our final class, and I devoted last night to the Christmas party and on Illuminate, and everyone brought a multimedia kind of a podcast or something that they had contributed to share with everyone else. And I just wrote a blog posting this morning on it, but I realized that having a class party in asynchronous environments just does not work, but it's great fun in the synchronous Illuminate world.
Well, actually, Terry, just to add a little bit of fun, one of our courses we have a round table database, which is a sort of a chit-chat kind of database for our students, and there was a virtual bar that one of the coaches had set up in the roundtable database. So the students do try to have fun in the asynchronous environment too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one more call for any further questions. I think everyone's really enjoyed this discussion though, and if there's any closing comments from our speakers, go for it.
Just thank you very much, everyone, for attending, and online and in person. It's great to see other people interested in what we're doing.
It is. And Terry, we must say, please don't give up. I think you'll have converts one at a time, but it will happen.
Okay, great. We're closing the session now. Thank you for your participation.